This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello, I'm Heather Force, and joining me today to discuss the gender pension gap are Stuart Murphy, co-head of DC at Legal & General, and Al Miles, L&G's Senior Solutions Strategy Manager. Could I get the pair of you to introduce yourselves, please? Stuart, let's start with you.
Hi, so as Heather said, I'm co-head of the DC business at LGIM. As part of my role, we look a lot at research and our sort of member profile, and I became increasingly disturbed by what was beginning to magnify in terms of the gender pensions gap and the disparity that was there. So I'm going to talk to you today about an inequalities task force that I formed in 2021. And the aim of that task force was to do something about the gender pensions gap. So as I say, lots more of that to come in this podcast.
And Al, could I get you to introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, thanks, Heather. So hi, I'm Al. I sit on the investment floor in a team responsible for managing one of the main default investment strategies for our DC business. Alongside the day job, I also get involved in strategic pieces of research, one of which has been analysing the size of the gender pensions gap across our book of business, close to 4.6 million members today. I'm also co-chair of the Pensions Inequalities Task Force that we launched last summer with my colleague Kim Brown. More on this later.
Thank you, that's great. Let's get started. I suspect that unless you've been living under a rock for a very long time, it probably isn't a shock to anybody listening that women's salaries and pensions lag behind men's. Men's pension pots generally are worth around twice that of women's when they come to retire. And Legal & General's research from 2021 showed that the disparity starts early on in women's careers and emerges even in female-dominated professions. So there seems to be no escape. I think many people listening, male and female, think, well, this is just an inevitable consequence of the biological reality that women get pregnant, have babies, and then understandably, they're the most likely to step back from full-time paid work or from seeking more senior, challenging roles to focus on child rearing. But what I want to look at today is, should biology be held up as an acceptable reason why, as a society, we just accept that parenting carries a significant financial penalty for mothers in a way that it doesn't for fathers? At Legal & General, we've been looking at the reasons behind the pensions gap and what might be done to help close it. Our DC conference this year will have a session on this issue. And as we rightly celebrate the 10 years of auto-enrolment, we're also thinking about how we can address problems for those falling through the gaps in the current auto-enrolment provision, many of whom happen to be women. So let's kick off today's discussion. Stuart, if I could come to you first. We know from Legal & General's own data from its 4.6 million members that the gender pensions gap is still very much an issue for younger pension savers as well as older ones. Can you tell us a bit about what your research has uncovered?
I can, no problem. So women's pensions at retirement from our research show that they're roughly half the size of men's pensions. That's the exact numbers are that 12,000 for female versus 26,000 for male. So there is a large pension gap there. And this is, as Heather mentioned, regardless of the sector that they work in. Now you need to consider, or we need to consider that women are likely to live longer, so typically live 4 years longer than men. So not only do they need more in their pension pot because they're going to live longer, they're actually getting to the point of there with pots that are half the size. So that, you know, that I talked about the stark numbers coming from the research that earlier in my introduction, that there's one for you straight away. As we looked across our 4.6 million savers, we found that every single industry in the UK has a gender pensions gap. And even those dominated by female workers. And that gap can be as much as 60% difference. Examples from different sectors include healthcare, where the gap is 59%, pharmaceuticals, where it's 46%, senior care is 45%. And why do I quote those three? I quote them because these are sectors that are key industries for female employees and employment. So that just shows you that even in those female-dominated industries, the gap still exists. If you then overlay that with some brand new auto-enrolment research we've undertaken, it sort of starts to bring the challenge to life. So 50% of young females through our research without a pension say that the reason they don't have it is that it wasn't offered to them. And that's versus just 28% of young men. Now, I've got to say really quickly here, we don't think there's anything sinister to this. This is an employer's, not making pensions available to women or something being done within the employer. It's just, we believe, a result of women falling below the auto enrollment earnings threshold. And we will come back to that a little bit later in the podcast. But women are more likely to be in part-time work or have multiple jobs, helping to give them greater flexibility for things like childcare. And this means that they don't earn enough in any of those single roles for their employer to be obliged to offer them pension membership. And we then overlaid that and looked in terms of the sort of the views of women and men in terms of thoughts around pensions. And over half, 54% of young women who aren't contributing worry about that. And they worry that they're not saving enough for retirement versus just 36% of men. So the point I'm making here is that this isn't that younger women don't care about savings for the future. It's just often they don't know what to do about it. And we also found, and this was a really stark one for me when we look at the gender pensions gap, there was a substantial number of women that weren't aware that how taking time out from paying into the pension scheme might affect them in the long term. More than a third of women who've taken a career break simply didn't know there was a long-term financial impact on their pension. And we will come on to talk about as we go through education and support, but there's a real fundamental one for me in terms of that understanding.
Thank you, Stuart. I think there's some really interesting stats there. But let's look more specifically at some of the issues. For instance, there's often been an assumption that the gender pension gap just reflects the gender pay gap. However, I believe our research has shown that this isn't necessarily the case. So, Al, can you explain what might be the key drivers behind the gap?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess there are quite a few different reasons lying behind the gender pension gap that we see today, and lots of those are interlinked. But if I just walk through a few of the key ones. So starting with the gender pay gap, we've already mentioned that, and it's well documented, well understood, and there's been compulsory reporting since 2017. And stats from the ONS show that the gender pay gap has fallen since 2017, so from 27.5% in 2017 to 15.4% in 2021 for full-time and part-time workers, so overall. So that's progress, which is heartening to see. And there's the fact that there still is a gender pay gap, so women are earning less per hour in work, so still some work that needs to be done there. And there's the fact that women take career breaks for various caring responsibilities, whether that be to look after little people or for elderly relatives, the impact of that on your pension contributions and therefore the pension pot you can expect at retirement. Part-time work, Stuart's already mentioned that, so more female employees, once they come back to work, will come back part-time. So latest stats from the ONS December 2021 around that is that 38% of females are working part-time versus 13.5% of men. And then there's the auto-enrolment, current regulations, so this threshold of earning above 10,000 to be automatically enrolled, and that then disadvantaging more women than men, and that 10,000 is just viewed on one job rather than across a few. So if you're a woman having several part-time jobs, with each of those earning less than 10,000, but in combination earning more, then you're still not caught by the auto enrolment threshold. There's also this lower earning limit currently with auto enrolments, so there's 6,240, at which point you can be auto enrolled. And lots of women are not caught by that currently. Childcare, Stuart's already mentioned this, but a recent OECD report shows the UK is the third most expensive in the world behind Switzerland and Slovakia. That was looking at net childcare costs as a percentage of the average wage, assuming two preschool children in the UK. That's 30% of net wages, with Slovakia and Switzerland at 31 and 32%, so quite a high childcare cost to bear, which is a reason again that women aren't returning to the workforce, even if they would like to. Divorce, quite startling stats there. 42% of marriages end in divorce, with 100,000 people in the UK getting divorced every year. Financial orders are only made in a third of these cases, and of that third, only 12% involve pension sharing orders, which will make a proper calculation of any pensions benefits on both sides, with 88% of that third using offsetting rights, which is more a kind of a less detailed look at the finances. So, for example, saying one partner will take the house and the other will keep the pension. And usually that's the man will take, keep his pension and the woman will have the house for various reasons. So that's another reason. Menopause, there's been quite a lot of noise about this recently. Close to 1 million women have left the workforce to date because of unmanageable menopause symptoms, managing those at work. And that's hitting women hardest when they are at the key kind of building their pension pot stage, so late 40s, early 50s. So that's a real key one to address and see whether we can do anything there.
Thanks, Al. There's an awful lot to digest there. Thanks, Al. So we've looked at the stats. We've examined what might lay behind them. And now, if I may, I'd like to turn to what possibly we can do to solve that. Obviously, pension providers, we and employers can't solve marital breakdowns. We can't prevent people from having difficult menopause symptoms. And I wouldn't necessarily want to demonise mothers. I'm sure I'm not alone in, I don't regret a second of the time I spent on maternity leave with my son, even if it might have affected my pension. But what things can we do to help address the imbalance? And can you tell us a little bit about what Legal & General has been doing? Stuart, could I come to you first, and then Al, please feel free to jump in.
Yeah, so I mentioned a couple of times already the inequalities task force that we put together. The idea of the task force was to lobby government, lobby regulators, trade bodies, and establish priority actions. So we have done brought providers together, brought industry representatives together, so we can collaborate on this, bring the research together, and work with our clients to help find solutions. Work with employers in the UK. The task force is looking to raise the awareness, as we've highlighted, and support members in their ability to make those informed decisions they need to make around retirement savings. As we've already touched on, auto-enrollment is one of the most, I guess it's one of those progressive initiatives. It's been a real success story, and it's celebrating its 10th birthday, and we're part of those celebrations because it has helped massively in terms of pension savings. But it is time to review the current position, and we are calling on the government and industry body to reduce that minimum auto-enrollment age to 16 so that young savers can start saving into retirement much earlier, and also to remove the minimum earnings threshold, and to take that 10,000 earnings threshold away, remove it completely so that everyone is auto-enrolled. And as we've touched on, this is one of the key drivers of the gender pensions gap, so that removal is really important to us. I think it's important, we're talking about bringing people together and collaborating. I also think, I'd like to take this opportunity and sort of highlight the need for advocacy by male leaders, so such as myself. I think, this is a problem that we all need to share. This isn't a female issue. And just, in terms of bringing it to life and where the passion for myself comes from, I mean, we recently released our gender pension gap findings, with a press release, and some of the comments that came back from industry people were along the lines of that women need to accept that they're going to have a smaller pension, and that their pension is a shared asset in a marriage, just like a home was one that came back. And we've already shown how few pensions are actually shared in divorce. And other comments around the gender pension gap is simply a result of the gender pay gap, and it's bound to happen. And aside from the prehistoric narrative here of the 2.4 children family, these comments made me really angry. I've got a 22-year-old daughter who's just about to enter her working life after university. And quite simply, why should she have to accept that she'll have a smaller pension than a male colleague that's entering the workforce at the same time? I mean, it's just plain wrong. And that, those views, those prehistoric views that I described, and that's why it infuriates me. We all have a duty here to eradicate this pension gap as we go forward. Stepping to the side of that to a degree, workplace diversity, we all know the positives of this. It's not just about gender, it's about neurodiverse employees that bring different thought processes. Businesses are more enlightened, they're more successful, we boost innovation. And I think having fairness in pensions just helps from that whole supporting female employees. And many employers are recognising this. There's lots of initiatives that we've seen to help to support female workers. A great example of that, L&G, was our recent change in healthcare provider, because the new healthcare provider brings menopause support. So, you know, really great stuff. So things like that are undoubtedly going to help employers both attract and retain female workers. So we're talking about diversity and what that brings, but as we move forward and the more awareness of the gender pension gap comes out, women will be looking at how they're going to be supported from an employer perspective as part of their sort of career progression, those sorts of things. We need to support women and all workers when it comes to understanding it, so education and awareness. And one of the things that came out of our research was number of younger, lower paid workers who don't really understand how pensions work and why they were a valuable benefit. And a real sort of good example that's quite a painful one from the research was a mum aged 30, and she was earning just below £10,000 a year, the threshold for auto enrolment, and was not basically wasn't saving for her retirement. She had no idea that she'd been eligible to ask her employer to offer her membership of the pension scheme and pay contributions into it, and that's over the last 8 years. And she was really clear in the research, she felt cheated by that. And, you know, again, that can't be right. So we need, whether it's better financial education in schools, government sponsored campaigns, clearer communications, and legal and gender, we've been calling for all companies and pension providers to disclose their gender pensions gap, raise awareness of it, work together to help close it across all sectors. And that, you know, if you like, is the key drivers of that pensions equality task force to address everything that you know, I've just talked about there and we've covered so far in this podcast.
So turning to you, Al, Stuart's spoken of the pension equalities task force, and I know you mentioned that earlier. What progress have we had, if any, from the industry or from a regulatory perspective?
Thanks, Heather. So to date, there's been lots of research highlighting the depth of the issue with regards to the gender pensions gap. But I guess now the focus needs to shift to the steps required to address this moving forwards. So having launched our own L&G Pensions Inequalities Task Force that Stuart's mentioned last summer, we've recently formed a wider group with partners across the industry. So that's formed of other providers and EBCs, so employee benefit consultants. They're all as passionate as we are to drive change in this area, which is really heartening and exciting to see. And so we're set to tackle some of the key drivers in areas where we are stronger together, combining our expertise. So, for example, lobbying government to make changes to current policies, whether those be pensions or childcare, is one of the two main reasons why a gender pensions gap exists. And I guess more on this on a future podcast as we make progress. And we're keen to widen this group outside of the pensions industry, as there are a number of other parties also pushing for change. So, for example, key unions and those championing the cause of working parents up and down the land. So with all of this, we'll need to focus on the low-hanging fruit, so quick wins, as there will be some aspects of the required change that may take some years to drive success in. But we mustn't lose heart. We must keep going.
Yes, of course we must. Is there anything, though, that a scheme member can do for themselves to help reduce the gender pensions gap? And Stuart, could I come to you first?
As we've discussed, there are many factors behind the gender pensions gap, and it's fair to say, you know, a lot of them are beyond most people's control, and that's why it's so important as an industry that we look to drive the change. But there are actions that individuals can also take to help reduce it. Now, I do feel, before I run through some of these, I do almost need to put a sort of semi caveat against it, because we are obviously going through a time of a cost of living crisis, and people are weighing up the cost of their bills versus pension contributions. But if we could for a moment remove ourselves from that sort of current sort of climate that we're in, it is important for women and for everybody to contribute as much as they can to their pension and to start early. So it comes back to that auto enrollment from 16 point. The compound interest that's built when you start early is still really underrated and poorly understood by both men and women. So the benefits of starting early. Things you can do practically, regardless of cost of living, is check any previous historic pension pots, see what the charges are on that. Is it worth consolidating your pension pots? likewise, check your state pension. You know, when will you get it? What will it be? It's not going to support the lifestyle you'd like. How are you going to cover any shortfall? Put a bit more into your pension when you get a pay rise. Again, caveat of cost of living, appreciate that. But in normal times, consider that as part of the pay rise time. Can you increase your pension contributions? It's important to talk to your partner. Make sure you know about each other's savings plans, the contribution limits. Are you going to share benefits or not? How's that going to work when the time comes to retire? It's important to take stock regularly. So midlife MOT is one way of doing that. You know, visualizing your finances, checking where you are, what your goals are, your health, your well-being, etc. And there's loads of free support out there like Money Helper, Pension and Lifetime Savings, Retirement Living websites, and LNG as well. There is a whole range of tools and well-being support that we offer. And ultimately, keep a regular eye on your pension. Make sure you're in full control and you know how it's shaping up. So you keep that control and knowledge as you go through your pension savings journey.
Yeah, thanks, Stuart. That's brilliant. Is there anything that you'd like to say in summary, just to, you know, wrap this up? Al, is there anything you'd like to add at this point?
Yeah, I guess wrapping up, addressing the current pensions gap is not going to be easy, and it's definitely not going to be quick. So more of a marathon than a sprint. I'm encouraged by the progress that we've made in closing the gender pay gap since reporting this was made mandatory in 2017. The same is needed with regards to the gender pensions gap, which is far greater than the pay gap, as we've already discussed. We're in it for the long haul, and we have in place now a robust framework for working both internally and with others to meet this challenge head on.
And Stuart, is there anything you'd like to add in summary?
I think Al's covered everything there, really, in terms of key points. And I agree this will be a marathon. But I want to emphasise again that this isn't a female issue. It's an issue for everybody. And we all need to work together to fix it. Simple as that. And anyone that's listening to this podcast that wants to join us, wants to speak to us, you know, we welcome that. We want the more people that collaborate and work together on this, the better. So if the task force is something that interests you, you simply want to have a conversation with us, you want to get behind what we're trying to drive here, we are open doors to that. So please do make contact. And I would finish with the last line, in that women like my daughter, that they have a right to an equal pension. For me, it is as simple as that.
That's great. Well, my thanks to Al and Stuart for this discussion, and I hope it's got people thinking about the gender pension gap and what we could all do to champion the solutions to it. Thanks for listening.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal and General Investment Management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the license corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For professional investors only.